live with Kevin here on CKMS 102.7, as well as on Facebook Live on Rogers Digital 946 and worldwide at radiowaterloo.ca/listen. Very pleased to have with me in studio the one and only Mika Barnes. Good morning, Mika.
Good morning. Good morning, all. Great to be here.
How are you doing?
I'm all right. Yeah, it's a show weekend. I got three shows coming up this weekend, so I'm all full of music. I've been rehearsing with the band all week, and it's, you know, like an artist's life is made up of so many elements, so many different things, including coming out to visit and say hi and talk about music, you know. But of course, the biggest thrill of all is that I, at the end of the day, I get to go and sing for a living. So this is a great week for me.
So tonight's the first night of the run?
Yeah, we're doing Homesmith Bar in Toronto. And then tomorrow we're at the River Run Center in Guelph. And then on Saturday, we're in Brampton at the Rose Theater.
That's right.
So it's a fun little run. And then, you know, we're right in the middle of finishing an album. So it's rare for me to step out and start performing songs. But we're giving people a sneak peek of some of the upcoming tunes.
Oh, that's great. So have you played at any of those three locations?
Homesmith a whole lot during the Jazz Festival in Toronto. It's my first time at the River Run. In fact, locally, the only place I've played Kitchener-Waterloo on my own is the Jazz Room.
Right.
And we just had a blast. It was actually a year ago, and it was really fantastic experience. The jazz fans are so, like, organized here. Mm-hmm. It's amazing.
Was that part through there's like a jazz, I forget the name.
The Uptown.
Group?
Well, there's the Uptown Jazz Festival, and this is, I think, the Jazz Society.
It was great.
Really well organized, you know?
Okay, yeah. I went out, I saw, I don't know if you would know this fellow, the Nick McLean Quartet.
I don't know Nick.
He's a Toronto fella. He's got actually, so you're not too far, so you might be able to come back next Thursday.
Yeah.
If you want. He I don't know what kind of jazz, we'll talk a bit about that.
But sure.
He does some traditional jazz, if I could call it that, with his ensemble called Nick McLean Quartet.
Cool.
But he has a different project called Snaggle.
Oh, I've heard of the Snaggle.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So with Brown Man Ali?
Yes.
So that is, he's playing in Kitchener next Thursday.
Oh, awesome. That'll be a great show.
It'll be interesting. I've heard him as the Nick McLean Quartet at the Jazz Room last year.
Yeah.
And, but it's funny because where he's playing in Kitchener, it's called the Boathouse, which is a small, it's a very small venue right in Victoria Park. So it's beautifully, it's, you know, a little restaurant patio and then a bar inside. I've only ever known it for punk rock and heavy metal.
Jazz and takes over the rock and roll room. I love it.
So I'm really interested. I'm going to be going to that show as well as seeing yours on Friday.
Oh, but, awesome. Great.
Yeah. It'll be quite an experience for me to sort of see, okay, how does he bring it? Because Snaggle, from what I gather, I've listened to a bit. It's a little more funky.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
He told me it was like Rage Against the Machine. It's not quite like that. Well, I said, okay, good. And then I think when he realized that I took him literally, he's like, well, no, kind of like. So it's, anyways, it's going to be a lot of fun. So so now you've done a lot and you're doing a lot. So you just
I do so many things.
Yeah.
I'm always doing something.
I don't know which area to focus on, but very briefly, I mean, people would probably know you for your work, but also certainly you had a storied time with the Nylons.
Yeah, in fact, we were in the Kitchener-Waterloo area literally like once every 3 months or something.
So what was that like? What was that experience like for you?
Do you want me to start at the beginning and go right to the end?
The mic is yours. The floor is yours. You take us wherever you'd like.
Ladies and gentlemen, when I was a child, I never dreamed. No, you know what? Honestly, it was an amazing time. It was like going to university. I was coming straight off of Queen Street in Toronto. Mm-hmm. I had my own act. And when they called and asked me to come on board, it was a rigorous training period for me to be able to handle the gig, which is all vocals all the time, a cappella, right?
Mm-hmm.
No, you don't get to rest during the guitar solo, right?
Mm.
And I was used to doing my own thing, being my own boss. So it was a real adjustment working with the three guys, but it was four of us. But they were such fantastic singers and such great showmen. I learned a lot about the craft.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned a lot about how to do this job. Like, you know, get up in the morning and go do your media, or get up in the morning and get to your plane and still do a show at the end of the day, and how you take care of yourself vocally, personally, spiritually, what it is you need to have together to do this job for life.
Right.
And that's one of the things that I really like to focus on when I'm working with up and coming artists, is like, how do you self-support while you're doing the really difficult, sometimes soul-destroying, you know, aspects of having a music career. I got lucky. You know, I'm one of the very few people that got plucked out of a local scene and brought to an international act and, you know, went around the world recording and doing concerts. Like, how lucky am I? So,
right.
You know, learned a lot. And ultimately, I also found myself not creatively satisfied in the long run, because if you're going to be a successful act, you have to deliver the hits the way people like to hear them.
You're talking by successful, you mean commercially?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, if you're going to fill a concert hall,
right,
you know, like around the world, you're going to have to sing The Lion Sleeps Tonight and the other half dozen songs that everyone's expecting you to do, which is exactly what the Nylons needed to do.
Right.
And at some point, after about, I think it was 5 years, maybe 6 years with the guys, I realized to keep growing creatively was going to be really important for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I made the difficult decision to move on, but I was thrilled for my time. I learned so much as a Nylon.
Right on.
Learn how to harmonize, tell a joke, and do choreography at the same time.
I'm sure it's probably the one of the most frustrating things I can imagine for performers of all kinds, is the better you are, the easier you're making it look.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah.
And that must be so frustrating, I think, for sometimes the lack of recognition. But that is really the beauty of it, is if you think of any, you know, truly admired performers, invariably, you know, like the example you gave of doing so many things at once, but it sure doesn't look like they're about to collapse. They look like they do this stuff in their sleep every day, and this is nothing. Makes it enjoyable. It actually is, you know, it's heart-wrenching to watch somebody struggle through and put their everything in, and you realize, yeah they're not even going to make it here. They're not that good.
Right.
I would think as an artist that could be really frustrating to kind of go, wow, you're just talented. You know, you don't have to do the work, but you mentioned that there's a little bit more than waking up and jumping on stage you know.
Well, it's interesting. You do see people who are naturally gifted who can make it work as a kind of like a jump on stage and just end up with the momentum. It's so rare, though. It's so few and far between. Usually, if people make it in this business, it's a combination of talent and smarts and drive, like real drive.
Mm-hmm.
Ambition isn't even enough. You have to be willing to put your muscle in. You have to put your back into it. And there are moments where we grow and we learn huge lessons. The most important thing is, like, why are we doing it? If we're doing it because we love it and we have a gift we want to share, then how much we're recognized or celebrated, or how rich we get or famous we get, matters less, because we're getting to do the thing that we're meant to do. And if you know you're meant to do it, and you're able to do it, and you're graced with the ability to do it, that's a pretty big win.
Mm-hmm.
Whether people recognize it, whether we, you know, can buy a house based on it, that's a whole secondary issue, you know?
Now, is that something you... Did you always know that, or that's where you needed to be or wanted to be, or was it something that you discovered, and when was that you discovered it?
I wanted to be a dancer first, and then I wanted to be a musician, but the world of dance really had my imagination. I thought like a dancer. I wanted to And I have had a dancer's training.
Okay.
So what's happened is the rigorousness with which dancers have to apply their focus in order to have a career was something I was prepared for.
Okay.
But the music just took over. It was like absolutely unavoidable. I was 12, maybe going on 13, and I started to, my blood started to course with songs I had to learn, artists that I needed to devour whole, you know. And that was back in the day when you had to go to a record store and, you know, purchase an album. It was like a really different time in terms of access, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very lucky. My parents were in the arts. So I was grew up in a house full of jazz. I met some of the great masters early in my life.
Mm-hmm.
My parents were interviewing jazz artists for the CBC for a documentary series called Universal Jazz, which was an award-winning documentary series. And so I had a chance to meet some of the greats. I heard my parents interviewing the greats, heard them, editing the interviews for radio. And I got inspired that if you're serious about a career in this business, there's so many different things that you bring to the table from your personal self. I started to believe that I could do this, and trial and error has shown that I can.
which is great, yeah. So tell
lots
me,
of error.
Well, I think, and I've heard, and I can attest to that. Error is something that also should be celebrated.
But yeah,
I think people, from an education point of view and an acceptance, I think the tide is starting to turn now with sort of changing the paradigm almost of how people look at making mistakes and errors and what they mean.
Right.
I mean, certainly the place I came out of was mistakes and errors were to be avoided.
Yeah.
They were signs of weakness. And as soon as the bigger the mistake, the more trouble you were in.
Oh boy. That sounds like the way we were all raised.
To maybe give the benefit of the doubt of those that thought that was the way, that probably saves some lives in life and death situations. And I honestly think that's where that comes from. There are certain places where we, such as walking in front of a bus and different things like that, you don't get a second chance. Got it.
Yeah.
But it's almost like somehow when they were teaching people how to teach people stuff, a slide or a brick fell out in the old, of the one that says, oh, by the way, except for then, it's kind of okay to, you're going to learn from your mistakes and you're going to be, that kind of got missed for a long time, but I think it's coming back. I see it. I'm happy for that because I mean, it's something we all, I think, can have experienced and can tell that, if you're able to fail, but recover, you learn things you're not going to learn anywhere else. And you're now better and unique compared to the next person, right? If you expect that it's going to be a straight line through,
good luck.
one in a million, maybe. Yeah. And even then, what looks like a straight line back to the outside view of a consumer of music or of the arts compared to the maker, the viewer, it appears like a straight line of success, right? It was two nights ago I heard somebody speaking and I wrote a couple of really nice things they said, but one of them was around the concept of success, specifically around the concept of overnight success. And they said something to the effect, does success happen overnight? And they said, yes, it does, but that overnight might have come after 20 years. So that overnight, like the day you define your success, probably it's overnight in the sense that at one point you have no album out and then one day your album's out. Mm-hmm. So, and if it hits the charts, boom, you're an overnight success. Right. You to get to that point could have been your whole life. Could have been 5 years on the road, 10 years on the road, right?
All those mistakes you get to make.
And exactly, right? So I think that's, at least what I've seen, the folks that I, listen to on music-wise or see in the arts, certainly, that they have their ups, they have their downs, and they keep coming back, and they learn and they hone and so forth. So, so New York Stories is the album. It's not out or it's out?
Oh, it came out. Okay. It came out.
Oh, so you have another one?
I'm working on a new one. Yeah,
I was mixing them up. Okay, so New York Stories, because I've listened to some of it. So that New York Stories is the album that you're touring. Right now, but you've got some other stuff that you're in studio with.
That's right.
Okay, you can't tell us too much about it.
I'm happy to.
When will we hear? Is it the same? Should we expect the same type of thing as New York Stories?
It's changing gears.
Ooh, okay. Yeah.
So New York Stories kind of New York Stories is like, it's like that album is like walking. I'm hoping, or it has been proven to me based on audience response, that album functions like you're walking into a jazz club, an intimate jazz club in New York City late at night. That's the vibe of the record. You know, it's romantic, it's very intimate, and very obviously very much inspired by the music of New York City. The new recording, which won't see the light of day until 2019.
Okay.
But it's we're moving from the intimate jazz club to the big Vegas showroom. So I got horns, I got girls, I got swagger, I got still intimate stuff on there, the drinking songs, you know. But and I had the opportunity to really look at the mid-century 50s, 60s repertoire of the greats, including, of course, the Rat Packers, but also, you know, really looking at Sammy Davis Jr. and other people from that era, like Mel Torme, Nat King Cole, Peggy Lee, Lena Horne, Judy Garland, people who were singing the hit songs of the day in their own fashion and who were performing at the big showrooms. Because, of course, there was a time when New York, Los Angeles, and Vegas was the circuit.
Right,
and
right.
If, you know, if you did good in one of those towns, you could start to play that circuit in those big showrooms. And I really wanted to bring that. I wanted to explore that that vibe. And so it's got a lot of bang, a lot of pow. And we'll expect a single and a video by the end of the summer. To kind of lead things off and start.
Summer of this year. So 2018, that's you'll right. tease us, but the album 2019.
Yeah.
Okay. That's, yeah, that's going to be something to look forward to. I think you did capture it. You described it as I've experienced it. The, New York Stories is kind of like, yeah, the dim lights, piano.
Yeah.
Whereas what I'm imagining now is almost a burlesque,
yeah.
you know, yeah. I don't know if it'll fit on a CD. You'll have to have video with it,
that's right,
or some multidimensional thing. So that's definitely something to look forward to. So in addition to all this, somehow you also find the time to have a successful career as a singing coach.
Yeah,
and you coach across the industry, right? Not
that's
just
right.
not specifically just singers. So tell that's us a right. bit about what is it, do you do that under? Is it Mika Barnes?
Yeah.
And what's that like?
So I do call it Singers Playground is okay. the name of the company.
Singers Playground. Yeah. Okay.
But you know, yeah. How lucky am I? Like when I started my career as a coach, I was working doing music for shows, so I was meeting actors, and then they would suddenly get a film or theater audition or TV audition, and they would need a song, and they would come by my apartment, and I would help them out back when I was a kid, 20, 21. And I seemed to have a knack for it, and people started to book jobs, right? In fact, I had an actress friend who suddenly booked a big film musical, and it was really exciting, and so I started to take it more seriously, especially when I moved to Los Angeles, when I was in competition with like some world-class coaches down there. And I realized, well, what is it that I do that is unique? And I started to really put together sort of an approach that was more my own, you know, and I brought that back to Canada about 10 years ago and started to coach workshops across the country. This year at Canadian Music Week, I'm coaching a voice workshop for up and coming artists and sort of, you know, bringing it to the industry. And one of the things that's happened is I'm slowly understanding more about myself too by coaching.
Interesting.
You know, I learn a lot by watching and helping people learn. You know, I see where I fall down in my habits, where I don't always practice what I preach. So then I have to like look in the mirror and go, okay, Barnes, if you're going to be, you know, you're getting paid a decent salary to help these people out, what are you going to, are you following your own advice? So it keeps me honest.
Okay.
And I love the opportunity to work with up and coming artists. It's something I wish that I had had Amika Barnes, when I was breaking into the business, I didn't know anything about career strategy. I knew nothing about performance skills for on stage. I had terrible stage fright. And I certainly could have used a voice coach. So I really try to look after, you know, as much of a macro picture of the artist as I can. In fact, this year I'm joining a local team on a contest called The Shot.
Okay.
And it's based here in Kitchener-Waterloo.
Oh,
and,
okay.
Yeah, and I'm going to be a judge mentor along with some fantastic other people. CJ Allen is a industry manager who's set this up. This is in the sixth season. And people are being encouraged to go online and submit by video. And so I'm going to be one of the judges helping mentor some up-and-coming artists in this area.
That's exciting. Yeah. So it's called The Shot. Now, that's I should know. You're telling me it's been going on for 6 years and I know nothing about it?
I'm not
a great local guy, am I? That's horrible.
Well, you know what? It's a terrific opportunity for local artists. And if you look up The Shot online, you'll see people will see
and
how
to CJ Allen.
Yeah.
So... That's exciting. So when do you start? Is that something that's recorded and then sort of broadcast later, or are you doing this in real time?
In real time. In September, we're going to have the auditions and the finals. And the idea is to showcase for industry. That's the focus is to really help develop the talent so that they can showcase for industry. And that's really, rather than like one of the TV singing shows where you win or you lose, this is something where hopefully everybody wins.
Right. Okay. And that sounds... that sounds very exciting. So definitely I'll do a little research on my own and probably try and promote that locally, because it's one thing that I've noticed just speaking about the local music scene. I think all local music scenes, but speaking specifically about this one in my time working and learning sort of more of the local music, I'm struck by the volume, the pure volume is incredible.
Yeah.
And how good it is, generally speaking. Obviously there's better and less better, I guess.
Sure.
But there's a lot of talent, and it's an ongoing discussion that I have with artists. I always ask them when they come in, because, you know, not everybody that's performing intends for it to be a career. They're doing it for love and for hobby or a bunch of reasons, but they pragmatically aren't, you know, they're not pursuing it on a career level, though many are. And, you know, I'll often ask them, and you could relate from, you mentioned, you know, the time before versus the time now, you know, with the technological advances, particularly the internet and digitization, was I remember it when I think it was the early 90s where the early 90s when there was the beginnings of, you know, a Napster was sort of the embodiment of this idea that somehow music can be digitized. Uh-huh. You know, that had been happening for a long time, but what Napster did is sort of made it easy to, you know, propagate without, you know, without control. So there was no copyright. There was no, you know, and you had sort of the whole split of the camps of artists going, you know, this is my life. This is my work being stolen. And then other people going, well, art is not meant to be controlled by the big conglomerates and so on and so forth. But what I remember from that was this sort of promise to the artists that, you know what, this is going to be good for you, because we're going to move, you know, the controls of big business and the record companies, we're going to get them out of the way, and the music will, the art will take over, the artists will control their destiny, because everything will flatten. My observation, true, but what wasn't added to that is that by doing that, you are now bringing in, you know, 10, 100 times, 1,000 times more people. That there's no barrier to entry anymore. Whereas, you know, let's say 30 years ago, to get an album out, you didn't do that in your basement with your buddies on the weekend. You had to spend money. You had to have, you had to have connections and so on and so forth. So I'm curious to get your thoughts, I guess. I mean, my conclusion from that was sort of mixed, and that, yes, it's easier for more people to get their stuff out there, but it's actually, I think, much harder now to do anything with it, because the competition's so fierce and it's so saturated. There's great bands every day, so how do you stand out?
Well, it's true that the democratization of the process has glutted the market, but it's interesting because it's still a combination of checks and balances. There's still a system in place by which an artist or an act gets seen and heard by the tastemakers. Yeah. And so even though there's millions and millions and millions upon millions of acts out there that now have access, that we now have access to without any barriers, in order to get the real momentum going beyond local, you really do still need believers right. who are sitting in chairs of power. So although it's changed in terms of access, there's still a whole system in place. You don't get to radio unless people have decided that you are going to be on the radio.
Right.
And why you'll be on the radio rather than the hundreds of other acts that have your amount of social media numbers will have a lot to do with whether you've conquered a streaming service, whether your videos and your content have conquered online. You know, there's a lot of things that have to fall into place before an act gets heard now, which is why I think acts feel like, wow, I can get really far really fast on my own. And that's true. But then there comes a critical mass moment where you've got to have the momentum from what we might call an old school industry checks and balances account book, where you have to kind of, you have to conquer certain elements. And, you know, just getting to radio but not having a brand identity, it doesn't help you. You know, your record will disappear and we won't care.
Right.
And so you have to, radio's now the cherry at the end of the, you know, on top of the sundae. And the sundae really counts. And that includes, of course, social media, but it also includes the streaming services and whether your fans feel like they're really getting something that they authentically signed up for when they come and follow you.
Right.
You know, like, are you really that person that you say you are counts more now because we have access to the artists.
Right. Okay.
Right. So like, as Mika Barnes, I'm here talking about a show that's coming up, talking about my coaching, but like, who I am now has to be somebody that you're going to also meet on stage Friday night at the River Run Center. It can't be like, oh, here comes that other Mika Barnes. It's got to be like, oh, people want authenticity. They want to know you're real, you know? So right now, that's really important to people.
And all those industry checks and balances that you mentioned, those are all pieces that you can bring through Singer's Playground in terms of your experience, helping artists sort of understand them if they don't know what they are.
Right.
And to a degree, guide them into the right places? Is that sort of one of the things you found?
I think what it is most of us don't want to think about the uncomfortable stuff around what makes a career happen. Mostly we just want to make our music. So often what'll happen is I will ask the important questions like, you know, who do you see as your fan base? Or when you're out playing your shows, who's coming to your shows? Oh, you don't play shows? You better start playing shows.
Right.
Okay. You know, okay, now that you've been playing shows, who's your audience? Are the women driving the ticket sales? Or is it the guys? How old are they? Because once you start to see who your crowd is, you get a better idea of how they see you and what it is in your work that they're relating to. Because that's really the secret to any big multi-million dollar success is, who are you appealing to and what is it about you as an artist that's appealing to that audience? You know, Ed Sheeran has an audience that believes in him. He's a hit songwriter who's made hits for people across the board, you know, including all kinds of acts that his fan base might not even listen to. They're not taking that into account when they think that's the guy with the guitar that's telling me his story, you know?
Okay. Like they, okay. So they view what they know of him and that's the guy they like, not, you know, the songwriter that was behind maybe a bunch of other stuff.
Yeah, they're not so interested in that. And it doesn't matter, but we're connecting to Ed Sheeran as a guy because we know he can hold an amphitheater with just his guitar. And that's the first thing I heard about him.
Okay.
Right? And so no matter whether I like a current song on the radio, that's his brand identity to me. So if an artist comes and starts to work with me, I'll try to get them to be as savvy as possible about what kinds of questions they're going to have to answer down the road.
Okay.
So they can start working on that.
Okay. And I, like you said, as you do that for other people, probably you're finding it,
yeah,
it continues to hone your own
craft
and maybe you make some little notes, say, oh, I there's something I can do, and I can work on that and add. So that's a great way. Now you offered Mika to use. I'll say use me as an example of how you can help people with their vocals.
Well, you have a great voice already, your talking voice.
That's usually where I peak early. I make a great first impression, and usually we keep it at talking, and then we can all go on our way happy. But I volunteered myself. I kept waiting to see if something would happen. The power would go out. Your phone would ring and say, "Mika, you're on early." So let's do it.
All right.
So
did you think of a song you might like to sing?
Yes, I've got everything.
Fantastic.
I've got two songs. But
great.
Let's do one. So here's one song now.
So sing me a verse and a chorus of the song.
Can I put the song on? No.
Well, that's up to you. If you want to sing a cappella, you can. If you want to sing to the track, you can.
Oh, I usually put the track and then I turn my own down.
So
then you just hear the band and go, "Yeah, that sounds good."
That's not going to help me. No.
I know.
Yeah.
I'll try. I'll just go cold and what are we going to do, right? It's only live radio and Facebook. Who cares? So, all right. Endangered species caged in fright, shot in cold blood, no chance to fight. The stage is set, now pay the price. An ego boost, don't think twice. Technology, the battle's unfair. You pull the hammer without a care. Squeeze the trigger that makes you man. Sado safari, the hunt is canned. The hunt is canned.
The hunt That's is the canned?
The hunt is canned.
What's that from? What is that song?
That is a song from Megadeth. I thought you would know, all the jazz guys are into Megadeth. That song's called Countdown to Extinction.
I know it. I know it. I didn't recognize it. I thought it was an old folk ballad.
Well, the way see? Now you're starting to see some issues. But,
I know what to do.
Yes, okay.
So I want you to sit in the chair like me with your heels on the ground. That's it, my brother.
Okay.
And I want you to breathe right down in your belly.
Okay.
So watch me for a sec.
Yeah.
Try that. So your tongue is out and your hand's right on your belly.
Okay.
Yeah, except for when you breathe in, I want the balloon, I want there to be a balloon in your belly that expands.
When I breathe in?
Yeah.
Okay.
So so open your mouth to breathe in. So watch me.
Yeah.
Good. Don't worry about getting all the way up to your shoulders. Okay. Keep your tongue out. Do it one more time. Great. Breathe that way and sing the first line of the song. Don't change anything.
No. Endangered species caged in fright. Shot in cold blood, no chance to fight.
And fill the balloon again.
All right. The stage is set, now pay the price. An ego boost, don't think twice.
And fill the balloon.
Technology, the battle's unfair. You pull the hammer without a care.
And fill the balloon.
Squeeze the trigger that makes you man. Sado safari, the hunt is canned.
Right. So your pitch got better.
Okay.
Way better.
Okay, well, that's good.
Yeah, in fact, I started to recognize the song.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, that would explain a few things when people don't know what I'm talking about. And I go, you know this song.
And the balloon breath got you, it's like now you have gas to drive your car.
Okay, yeah.
And without that gas, your car was, stuttering.
Okay.
Now the resonance in your skull, because you have a very natural resonance in your skull, all that air is becoming vibration.
Okay.
So that's how you want to think about it. So before you go and you sing a phrase, you want to get the air that's going to support that sound.
That makes sense. Now, obviously, when you're singing, you're not stopping your song and taking a breath. We're doing this in a very deliberate sense right now. But I guess that with practice and time, that just somehow is happening. And I'm not standing there going, and trying to sing.
No, like once you get used to balloon breathing, every time you're not singing, you're breathing.
Okay. It's not, because I'm feeling it very, again, deliberate. It's not a pause and take the biggest breath of your life to go underwater.
I do when I got a really big high note coming.
Yeah? Okay.
For sure. If I'm singing, okay, so if I'm like, start spreading the news, I'm leaving today, I'll make a brand new start of it in old New York. If I can make it there, I make it anywhere. Come on, come through New York, New York.
Ow. That's amazing. Yeah, that's that you've got that. That gives me right away a completely different way of looking at it, because I couldn't tell. If I wasn't looking at you,
right,
I'd have no idea that you're even doing any of that. It's just you're just singing. Somehow you're getting this breath in there.
Right.
That's fantastic. Okay. All right. So can I go knock Dave Mustaine out of the lead singer spot, or am I a few steps away still?
Let's do one more lesson.
Okay. One more, and then I'll call the band. Okay.
Awesome. So there's a tip.
Okay, that's good.
Work with that.
Yeah.
And like, you'll notice in a couple of weeks that everything you sing will change.
Okay.
In terms of your sound, the deficit of air was the number one problem.
Okay.
You know, try singing the other song, but using the balloon.
Oh, dear. What did I do with the other one? And I do know the lyrics, but I find... I'm a very, that's another thing that impresses me with artists, is you actually are doing more than one thing at once. I consciously can only do, they all have to go on automatic.
Right.
All right, so balloon. Forget about the fans.
Okay. And open your mouth to breathe. That's going to make all the difference.
The world was on fire, no one could save me but you.
Uh-huh. Keep breathing.
Strange what desire make foolish people do.
Uh-huh.
I'd never dream that I'd meet somebody like you.
Uh-huh.
And I'd never dream that I'd lose somebody like you.
Well, there's lots of good news going on. The next sort of stage of what this would be. Yeah, don't worry. Don't worry. This is a lesson. It's not like you're not actually making a record. The pitch stuff that's happening is partly just that you're not used to singing.
Mm-hmm.
And your ears need some training.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm noticing is that you're using your skull really well and your nasal resonators are hooked up, which is great.
Okay.
I want somebody like you. Mm-hmm. It's all the resonance is living there on the very front of your skull.
Okay.
That's a really big secret to good singing.
Okay.
A lot of us will tend to go to sing from our throat. We'll go like... I want somebody, and it's exhausting.
Right, right.
Eventually it hurts.
Mm-hmm,
sometimes we lose our voice. And there's a lot of fantastic singers that do throaty sounding singing. And it's one of the reasons why Adele is having trouble in her concert career is because she sings full throttle with a real throaty sound. And it's really hard to reproduce that night after night in concert. But what's working for you, and what I would have, if we were working together, I would have you look at that nasal cavity resonance. I want somebody like you. Sing it again with your fingers right up on your nasal cavity. And let's see if that helps you with your pitch landing.
And I never dreamed that I'd lose somebody like you.
Uh-huh. Big breath in the balloon.
And I'd never dream that I'd lose somebody like you.
Uh-huh.
No, I'm not going to go to that. Not doing that one. Let's go back
Try it. Let me hear it.
No, Don't wanna fall in love.
So we don't have a pitch reference, which makes it a little bit harder for me to tell whether you know whether that note is right or not.
I'll tell you from, I think I know nothing. The only thing, well, here's my, what's the right word? Here's my empirical data that I've collected over the years. Everybody that's heard me tells me I suck. And that's across the board, across times, other than maybe somebody just trying to curry favor will go, right. You sound nice.
So you know what it is? You have a great tone, but you do not have a great grasp of pitch and relative pitch. So go ahead.
Yeah. So, because I was going to say, and I don't know if you can tell me, I'll already be a little bit ahead. Between tone and pitch, the flip side of what your reference is, if I'm singing along to an artist, at a certain point, I can hear what I think is the harmonics. When I'm in, I feel like I'm in the same lane as the song.
Right.
And then I go, okay, I'm on, is that pitch?
Right. I don't know.
Oh, so it could be either.
See, I'm not sure. But
All of a sudden I'll hear, and even though I might not be in the right octave, I feel like I'm in the right sound.
That's probably pitch. But the thing is, you're...
But I have no idea how I get there or how I stay there. Even I've tried it with graphs.
And right. No, your ear is not great. You need ear training. If you were going to be serious about singing, you'd need ear training because the way that you go off pitch is not a little bit. You go off pitch in a way that makes me think that your ear doesn't hear where pitch lands as well as it would need to.
Mm, I don't even know what you're... Like, I literally have very little concept of what you're saying. I know the words.
You sing out of tune.
Okay. But I'd say, okay. I wouldn't know what my ear was supposed to do. I'd say, okay, now. So
I would send you away for ear training. I would say, do some ear training. And the technique work will get you more tone and will get you a better grasp of how to use your voice. Mm. But you would need ear training in order to, if you were serious about learning to sing, that would be key.
And that's the feedback loop. Is that the idea?
Yeah, it's like, for
so
you.
So I can hear and adjust on the fly.
That's right. Exactly.
Okay.
That's it.
And is that, is this the difference, I would say, between somebody that's naturally, let's say, talented and they just can sing somehow? Like yourself.
Right? No, I had to work at it.
Well, but you have a, whatever your base level is that just is probably at a higher level, say, than the average person. Is that a fair statement even?
Sure.
Okay. So does that mean you happen to have a finely tuned feedback mechanism already, or you just happen to don't need one because you're already where you're supposed to be? Is that a fair question?
Yeah, sure. In my case, I sang like a big bull moose when I was a teenager. I had a big voice.
Yeah.
I was passionate to sing. I certainly wasn't any good, but what I was hungry for it.
Okay.
And so I was willing to put in the 10,000 hours.
Right.
I mean, I was performing literally the same year that I started to learn piano. I started to learn songs, and I started performing right away at open mics. I was like hungry to perform.
And you're saying you weren't good. Like literally were people going, this guy's no good?
No, they were saying I was good. But I know now looking back and when I hear recordings of me then, I'm like, yeah. What I hear is the passion. What I hear is a musical personality. Okay. But like as a singer, I had a real long way to go.
Mm-hmm.
And as an artist, I had a real long way to go. But you know, we discover that along the road. What are the missing elements? Like I was telling you earlier in our conversation, when I'm working with clients, I'm asking them, I'm trying to get them to ask the questions of themselves. You know, like I want a good agent. Why don't I have one? What's missing?
Right.
What do I need to do to find an agent that works for me? Vocally, I'm not getting the feedback on my voice. People think that my voice is the weak link. What is it that I need to do to take care of that? If we can keep asking those questions, we can solve them.
Mm-hmm.
It's just being willing to go to the professionals and go, hi, here's my problem. You know,
right.
Will you work with me? So in your case, ear training would be the key.
Okay.
And then once your ears are a bit more trained, it would be easier for you to work voice technique. And then you'll be easier for people to hear you sing. And then they'll be like, wow, you got a decent voice. Because you do. But
okay.
It's just really untrained, and your ear is the key. That is my professional opinion, Kevin.
Hey, I'm going to take that to the bank. Thank you, Mika. That's great.
Let me know if the bank underwrites anything based on that.
Yeah, I know. They'll be saying, why are you here? And we already told you, put on pants when you come here. But that's a different issue. We'll bring that up. That's a future segment.
Yeah.
I'll let you know what happens there. So listen, thank you so much. So I wanted to ask you one follow-up question for the audience around that.
Yeah.
Question, I mean, it's a question I'm asking, but I think a lot of people would ask as well. Yeah. So when you know, the shot is a great, that's a great opportunity for artists locally, but, you know, reality TV has now brought this concept of, whether it's Dancing with the Stars or whatever, of performing to experts, judges in the field. And then, you know, what they've started to show us beyond sort of the finals and the big TV stuff, they show us all these auditions and you literally see, you know, thousands per city showing up. And, you know, of course they show us the one that's got the great story, life story to make you cry a bit and whatnot. And then boom, they happen to be this diamond in the rough, right? That probably all of us, some part of all of us says, oh, that I want that to be my life story. I want to be just plucked out of the shit I'm in.
Right.
And, you know, plopped where I belong on the top of this world and rule it. I mean, put your own color to that, but that's, you know, but
human
I think
nature.
Yeah. Most of us also go, okay, well, whatever, that would be nice. But in the meantime, I'm going to go about my business. So my question is, between those two extremes, you've got the rest of us.
That's right.
How much, and I'm worried. I forgot the actual key part of my question, but we'll find it. Is so when people are, when you're as a judge, for instance, in that scenario, you've got a bunch of people. Out of 10 of them, you're going to say, okay, well, you can rank the 10. Obviously, you could probably get from best to worst between those. Is there a certain number of the population that you would say, okay, I don't care how passionate and how rich and how much time you have, you're never going to be anything more than, you know, a singer in your basement, to the other ones that are like, you know what, you've got a lot of stuff going on, I guess, musical, what I think of as talent, without the work, so to speak. How much of it is dependent on that talent, I guess, versus the person that says, okay, I'll do the ear training, I'll do the proper breathing and I'll do the work.
Right.
But is there a group that you would pull aside and say, well, go ahead, but, you know, just, you're not going to, all that's not going to change, you know, a pig's still a pig, to put it in blunt terms.
Well, you know, because studio wizardry and visual representation of an artist is sometimes just a really big part of how we get to know an artist, like a voice can be worked with in the studio.
Okay.
And
right.
If someone looks spectacular, there's ways to have, I mean, I think Madonna is probably a really good example of somebody who pretty well would have been told she can't sing.
Really?
It's a pretty crappy voice.
You know? Really?
Yeah.
See, that blows my mind.
I
admire and I remember, I mean, I remember when she started and that girl from day one, I thought she's got it.
Yeah.
Which is all the other stuff.
If you have it. Right?
But I couldn't tell she was a crappy singer. I didn't like that kind of music. I'm like, so she's they a crappy fooled singer because she wasn't doing my stuff. That's
So they managed to fool you. And they fooled you through studio gizmo wizardry and through spectacular looks and blonde ambition.
Right. Okay.
So if she's in a pile of singers and I'm being asked to judge whether she's the one that's going to stay in the basement or whether she's going to go all the way, I'd have to get to know her.
Like just by listening to her, she would have been...
I would have
nobody
said,
would have turned
it.
Around if they weren't looking kind of thing. And there was no other bells and whistles.
Oh yeah. That's not a voice that you launch a career on unless a whole lot of other things are in place. If you're a spectacular writer or if you're the kind of front person that's undeniable, no one ever thought that Patti Smith had a good voice. She was never a singer, okay, but she is a dynamic, powerful front person who helped change the face of rock and roll for women and to many generations. So it's not the singing voice that people care about ultimately. My job is to give people the best singing voice they
right.
have.
Okay.
So when you're asking me to judge whether somebody should be a basement singer or should be on our television, I'm not sure that their singing voice is actually the deciding factor, because there's a lot of really dull singers who have a lot of the other parts together and will keep our attention. Madonna spinned it out over how many number one singles?
That's a career. She's an icon across a million different things.
Sure.
And like I said, there's not a style of music, and there's very few of her songs, if any, that are sort of in my exhaustive playlist.
Right.
But I know a whole bunch of her songs, and I have a ton of admiration for her. But I, for instance, would never have thought, well, her thing is she's not a really good singer.
Well, she's a terrible singer, but she has a nice castle in England.
Yeah. I mean, I almost feel like I just don't hear that.
This starts to talk about what you hear mm-hmm. and why your ear training might be mm-hmm. essential. Once you've got your ear training, don't listen to Madonna.
I'd love to me, music is, I mean, and I could go on for hours. We'll wrap up.
Sure.
But for me, one of the things that I've always felt, and part of why I love conversations like this with people like you, Mika, is it's discovery and really, you know, curiosity for me to learn things. Still at this tender age of slightly south of half a century, so that way I've confused people that aren't paying attention. I still feel in many ways like there's clouds in front of my eyes around anything to do with music, even though I've loved listening to music and engaging with it in some form or another, you know, performing for myself or in the cars, you know, from as far back as I can remember. And I mean, I can sweat, and I could used to be able to dance for hours and just get into music like insanely. I can't read it. I don't understand. You know, I took to give you an example, this might make some sense to you. I took guitar lessons as a kid. I couldn't understand, like, got it, but not really. I mean, some notes, okay. Smoke on the Water and House of the Rising Sun started to get me a little intimidated. And they're
sure.
like, no, that's the easy stuff. And I'm
right.
like, yeah, okay, sure. Sure it is. I'm done.
Ear training.
In my 40s, my wife was kind enough to buy me, at my request, drum lessons. So I took drum lessons.
That's nice.
For about 6 months. Rented a kit, so I had it at home, because I, again, out of this unfinished business of mine of trying to understand what, to me, I should at least understand to appreciate it better. And I got a lot further. I realized that what I actually like in music and the beat and all that isn't the guitar, that's the drums, that's the backbone, and that kind of theory helped me a lot. I saw that maybe that's something with 10,000 hours maybe I could pursue. Yeah. I didn't have the 10,000 hours, so I brought the drum kit back.
Yeah.
Thanked the guy that gave me the lessons, because I feel like I went from here to here for myself. But beyond that, like pitch, tone, timing got a lot better for me. I didn't even know timing. I really honestly thought was all about guesswork. You're just good at knowing stuff. You're like, yeah, it's coming. Oh, I was wrong again. Understanding drums a bit better and 4/4 and little things like that, I at least have crayon drawing of a structure in my head. But everything else, Mika, is like a haze.
That's so, okay. I can't do radio.
So you do fantastic radio. What are you talking about? Hey, you've got a natural radio voice, I would
Thank
say.
You. Thank you.
I mean, you've got a natural singing voice, but it's deep and resonant and whatnot. So, so thank you, Mika, for coming in. So you're playing, you start tonight in Toronto, tomorrow in Guelph, Saturday in Brampton.
Yeah.
New York Stories is the album. And the name of the company again, Singers Playground?
Singers Playground, yeah.
So folks looking for vocal coaching or even speaking?
I don't do a lot of speaking.
You do mostly around vocal
yeah.
and basically helping artists with navigating the business.
Yeah, a lot of career strategy.
Voice and beyond career strategy. So Singer's Playground, they can find it. And anything else we need to mention, Mika?
I think we did it.
Awesome. Thank you very much. This has been In Studio with Kevin, speaking with Mika Barnes on 102.7 CKMS.